Good evening, good morning, wherever you are throughout the world. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. I hope that everybody had a wonderful and safe, happy Halloween. Also here to join us for All Saints Day, All Souls Day, as we straddle the barrier between the two. And remember, folks, this is the night to turn back your clocks. That's right, at about 2 a.m. Central Time, you're going to want to reel that clock back. What does that mean for Coast to Coast? That means an extra hour of Coast to Coast for some of you. You'll be able to listen as they play a special replay for the final hour of tonight's show. In the first half of tonight's show, we will welcome author Rob McGregor for an exploration into the realm of ghosts, spirits, and alien encounters, as well as celebrities who've seen ghosts and former celebrities who are now in the realm of ghosts. We'll also be visiting with Dr. Michael Sala in the later part of tonight's show, a pioneer in the development of exopolitics, who will discuss the significance of the Pope's endorsement of ET life as part of universal evolution. And we'll talk about the live streaming video of UFOs near the International Space Station during four incidents in this October. That's a lot to cover tonight, so stay tuned with us. We've got all that coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. Rob McGregor is a winner of the Edgar Allan Poe Award and has been on the New York Times bestseller list. He is the author of 19 novels, including 7 Indiana Jones stories, 15 nonfiction books. He and his wife, Trish, are co-authors of 4 books on synchronicity, and his latest is Bump in the Night, Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters. Welcome back to Coast AM, Rob McGregor. Good evening, Rob.
Good evening. Hello, Dave.
Did you have a good Halloween?
I had a pretty quiet Halloween, didn't do too much. It was enjoyable.
But very quiet. I've been hearing from people all around the United States, just not as many kids out knocking doors and ringing bells looking for candy. Were you guys inundated this year?
Well, Trish kept buying candy, thinking there was going to be a lot of kids, and we had about 10, and so we have a lot of candy. You want some?
Yeah, no, I've got plenty of candy at home, plus my kids are out there trick-or-treating, so now I've got all the candy I bought and all their candy brought in. It's going to be a... well, at least we're ready if the winter is tough this year. We've got a lot of snack food hidden around the house. Let's talk about your new book. This is fascinating to me. Now, I do want to mention, Rob, we had a chance to talk, back in 2006, I think was the first time you and I spoke, when we talked about the book The Fog.
Right.
And talking about electronic fog and that weirdness, has there ever been any correlation between paranormal encounters with ghosts and the electronic fog phenomena? Have you seen any kind of correlation data or any kind of consistency between people having experiences with both?
Well, you know, it's interesting you start out with that question, because just today, my co-author, Bruce Gernon, of The Fog, called me and said he had just received a very strange story from a man who, in 1985, was in the Marines and was on a ship. Now he's been corresponding with this man back and forth for a while, so he kind of summarized his story, which is really strange. He was they were off the coast of Puerto Rico when a fog came, surrounded their ship. And all the electronics went out. All the electricity actually went out. Everything shut down, and nothing was operating. But what happened to him is that he started hearing this voice in his head very clearly. It was a woman's voice, and she was telling him things and telling him to do things. I can't remember all the things that he was supposed to do, and he just felt that he had to do what she was saying. And but the startling thing that I remember Bruce told me was that she told him to jump off the ship. Now this guy, he can't swim, but yet he moved all the way over to the edge and was on the verge of jumping over when he was just fighting with his mind this whatever it was that had captivated him. Captured his mind, captured his body, actually, and finally he broke free of it, and the electronics came back on, electricity came back on, and they were able to get out, move out of this fog. And I'm not sure if anyone else on the ship had that same experience, but it was very vivid for him. So I'm not sure what that was, and it sounds like a story that you might read in a tabloid, you know, that the reporter just made up. But this was somebody who actually had this experience and contacted Bruce and was telling him about it.
Well, the reason I bring that up, knowing the weirdness of things that have happened in places like the Bermuda Triangle with these electronic fogs that that have popped up, and knowing that a lot of paranormal investigators claim that when spirits make their presence known in a lot of cases, it affects electromagnetic force or electromagnetic frequencies. I'm just curious if they're, you know, readings-wise, it'd be intriguing if people were able to correlate that kind of data and see what, you know, I know a lot of the, what's the word I'm looking for here? A lot of the electronics on planes just start going crazy when they hit this fog. So there's no real way to get a solid data port. But I'm just, there's something going on regarding this electronic force, right? That this electrical force field that seems to be in certain places and is stronger in some places than others and can roll in. And it might make sense why some locations are more haunted than others. Are they kind of in their own little electronic force field as well?
It seems like they're like in a window between dimensions in these particular areas. I think they're maybe because of that the particular condition of the particular area there, especially around the Bermuda Triangle, that it could be a window for UFOs or possibly interdimensional beings, whether you call them aliens or spirits, come through there.
Have you personally ever had an experience with a ghost?
Oh, yeah. I've had a couple of experiences stand out for me. That one was like a ghost, scary ghost story, and the other was very energizing. The scary one was in the town of Casadega, Florida, which is a spiritualist community about 30 minutes north of Orlando. And it's a very small town that was started in the late 19th century. And there's about 150 residents in this town and a little Mediterranean hotel that was built in the 20s, and that hotel is haunted. And all the residents there are mediums, which is very unusual. They have little signs, Dr. So-and-so or Reverend So-and-so. And people come into town mostly on weekends, but during the week as well, and get readings there. And it's an unusual-looking place for Florida because there's hills, there's pine trees. Florida is very flat, hardly any hills at all. And the houses are all these two-story wood frame houses from early part of the 20th century. So one night, Trish and I were there the winter and during the middle of the week, and we were actually the only ones in the hotel that night. It was a very quiet place. And daughter was with us, and she was a baby at the time. We went to bed about 11:30 or so, turned out the lights, and we'd no sooner turned out the lights when we heard this stomping noise coming from the other end of the hallway, and it was just this stomping, like heavy boots crashing against the floor, coming closer and closer. And we got up, went to the door. It came closer and closer to the door. I put my hand on the door, and there suddenly I just sensed this very strong feeling of evil on the other side of that door. And the last thing I wanted to do was open that door at that moment. And Trish was feeling the same way. And, you know, we have an interest in this subject. So, and I would love to see a ghost, and I wanted to see a ghost, but whatever was out there, I did not want coming into the room. So what actually we did is we grabbed the dresser and shoved it in front of the door as if that might help. And I mean, we were very frightened, and we grabbed our daughter and were holding her, and whatever it was just backed off and disappeared. And, that was a very frightening experience for us. But then the other experience I had was in the Dominican Republic. On a week we stayed there at the beach on the north side of the island. It's a windsurfing town, and that's why I was there. And the hotel we stayed at was advertised as a beachfront hotel. But what we did not know when we ordered our rooms there is that this hotel has a little, like a courtyard in the center, but instead of being a regular courtyard, it's a graveyard. And so the buildings wrapped three sides around this graveyard, and then on the other side of the graveyard was the beach. And we're in the back, facing the beach on the back side, so right outside of our porch, we're looking right into the graveyard. And so one day we noticed that the gate was open of the graveyard. And so Trish and I were curious. We walked down and walked into the we'd been there about three days or so, and it had always been locked. So now it was open. We walked in there, and an old man walks up to us. And Trish is originally from Venezuela, speaks Spanish very well, so she was speaking with him, and he was saying that he was a grave digger, and he was digging a grave, and he came upon a coffin, and he said the sand keeps coming in here, getting higher and higher, so the graves are stacked one across another, and he was going to open up this coffin to see what was in there, and he wanted us to come and see. And we said, I don't think we want to do that. So
<Right.
laughs> it didn't seem like something we were really that curious about, to see what was in that coffin.
You're so, intrigued, but just not that intrigued.
You're right. Yeah. And this guy was very strange, too. He's a little guy, about 5 feet tall, and he was just very odd. And so for some reason, I bent down, picked up a stone in the graveyard, put it in my pocket. Oh, the other thing was just near the entrance of the the first thing we saw before the old man came up was we thought this was a very old, ancient graveyard. But the first thing we see is a gravestone that's made out of the top half of a windsurfer board. And this guy was buried. It's a fresh grave. The guy was buried there 4 months ago. So, and the little epitaph said, "Wherever the wind blows, I'll be." And so was this an American tourist who was staying at this hotel, and now he's staying here permanently? Very strange. So so we left then, and by this time our daughter was 11 years old, and she wanted no more of this graveyard, getting out and going on the porch and seeing this graveyard. So we asked the administration if we could change rooms. So they put us on the side. So the front of our room looked right out to the ocean. However, the door was actually closer to the graveyard than where we were before. But so this was our last night. We were staying there, and I still had that stone with me. And we went to bed. Television was off, and our daughter was in the back. We were in the front bedroom. We'd fallen asleep, and suddenly I hear this sound. It sounds like a wrecking ball hitting the side of the building. Everything is shaking. The bed seems to be shaking. The building seems to be shaking. It's going boom, boom, boom. Three times, pause, and then again. Three times, pause. I heard it again. Three times, this wrecking ball sound. And at that moment, Trish and I sat up simultaneously and looked at each other, and we both said, "Did you hear that? Did you?" And we realized it wasn't a dream. We were both experiencing this, and at that point, the sound was gone. It stopped right then, but the television was on now. And so it was like a poltergeist experience. The television was on very loud. We hadn't had the television on at all. And, there was no sense that time. There was no sense of fear at all. I felt very energized by this experience. And so the next, morning we told the people who run the hotel about it, that, we had this experience there, and they said, "Yeah, there's ghosts here, but they're very friendly ghosts. They're good ghosts." And we said, we said, yeah, we told him about our experience, and then we headed out, and that was our end of our trip. But so that was my two most dramatic ghostly experiences.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, when you had that second experience,
yeah,
and you know, the TV turns on by itself, you're hearing the booms. Was there any period of lost time for you? I mean, this also sounds very much like the alien abduction scenario. Sometimes the loud noises that bring you to, you know, full alert, and then electronics start acting up and acting strange. Was there any correlation for you with that?
And also the three knocks are something that people have talked about, too, hearing these three knocks in repetition. It's difficult to say because we just went back to sleep. I mean, we could have lost an hour or two, and we might not have noticed it. But we didn't consciously note any loss of time.
Wouldn't it be interesting, especially because when you were woken up, you were more charged by this. It wasn't a fear. It was more of an energy that you felt.
Yeah, I felt very energized, yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. Now, I also wanted to mention, I thought this was intriguing, right? When you felt the fear in the first story, you decided you'd grab the dresser and push the dresser in front of the door. Now, yeah. In your mind, was there any doubt that what was on the other side of that door was supernatural? Or were you thinking it could be some kind of intruder standing outside your door?
Well, there was the possibility that there was only one person, the night guy working there at the desk, and maybe the thought occurred much later on. The thought, maybe he put on these heavy boots and were just trying to scare us. But at the time, no, there was no sense of that being something like that at all. It was something supernatural, something paranormal. That was that activity that was taking place in that hallway outside and it outside our door, and it was very frightening.
Isn't it intriguing, though, you decide that what you're going to do, here you've got a supernatural force that has obviously transcended the veils of time and space to come back and walk these halls, and what's going to stop it is a dresser. That's going to be pushed up against the door. That will stop it. Now, the reason I bring that up is on our show, Darkness Radio, a couple of people have thrown some really interesting ideas. I've always said, why do we feel so much more comfortable under our sheets when we hear something or we see something we believe to be supernatural? We throw our sheets and blankets up over our head. Now, you would think the initial reaction would be you would want to see what's coming at you. You would, you know, when you notice there's something in your room, covering yourself seems like it would put you in one of the most vulnerable positions. But then it seems that most of these things dissipate or leave. And I've heard some intriguing philosophies that perhaps it's the intention that children, or as adults, when we throw that sheet and blanket up over our heads, it's not the thousand weave cotton strands that are keeping the demons and ghosts at bay, but it's the intention shield that we're putting up. And the same was done with that chest. You push this chest in front of the door, promoting the intention you were blocking, and that in itself might have been enough to stop abruptly what was trying to come in.
Right. And there's also the something about having that shield of protection. For example, sometimes in the middle of the night, I'll get up and go into the bathroom, and I'll hear a noise on the other side of the shower curtain. And for some I don't know what it is, dripping water or whatever, but I'm thinking, I am not going to pull that curtain and see what's behind there.
Right.
maybe something from childhood, you know, I'm not going to look.
Ignorance is bliss, right? I mean, who wasn't
right?
Terrified after watching Psycho the first time and you know, constantly watching that shower curtain for any kind of shadow on the other side from that? But it's amazing how your mind can start to impact you with these fears, and how little noises may suddenly amplify and turn into something much more terrifying because of our expectations.
Right. Yeah.
And
there's the window between the, you know, expectations and, you know, fears that we have, psychological fears, and but actual experiences, actual paranormal experiences that happen. So it's, you know, there's I don't think it's all one or all the other. This is a combination.
No, I totally agree. And there's so much that we'll report on tonight. Bump in the Night is the name of the new book, Ghosts, Spirits, and alien encounters. You use the term ghosts and spirits, both in the title. When we come back, we'll find out from our guest, is there a difference between these? Are they just interchangeable? What are his thoughts? We'll also hear real-life stories of haunted houses, phantom ships, and spirit contact. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Hello, thank you very much for joining me this evening. My guest for the first 2 hours, Rob McGregor. His new book, Bump in the Night, Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters. That's what we'll be covering. If you've missed any part of tonight's show, don't worry about it. Here's a really simple solution for you so you never have to miss another minute of the best in overnight talk radio. Head on over to coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com and become an insider for about 15 cents a day. It'll give you access to the past 5 years of archived shows. You'll also get access to live chats with George Norrie and some of the other hosts of Coast to Coast, and you get a chance to pick the brains of some of the best guests right in the live chat as well. There's news, information, and more. Again, become a Coast Insider at coasttocoastam.com. Let's get back with our guest. You've got mentioned in the title of your book, Rob, Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters. You mentioned both ghosts and spirits. Is there really a difference between the two?
Well, generally speaking, a ghost haunts, a spirit guides. Ghosts I see in two different ways. They can be like unconscious energy shows that perform repetitive actions, things happening over and over again related to the person's life. And they might be totally unaware of that you're there in their presence. But they also might be spirits that are stuck between the physical world and the afterworld, and they might be clinging to physical existence and not even know that they're dead. And in fact, they may think that you're the one who's the ghost. So, and then on the other hand, a spirit is usually a guide and maybe a deceased family member or friend who might come to you in a dream or a vision, or possibly another way through a medium. So that's the difference I see.
Let's take another quick break. When we come back, we'll hear about some of the most haunted locations that Rob has pulled together in the culmination for this brand new book. We'll also talk a little bit about celebrity ghost stories and celebrities who are now ghosts. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. In his brand new book, Bump in the Night, Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters, Rob McGregor has investigated and pulled together some of the most haunted locations. Let's start talking about some of those. In your research, Rob, were there any places that really kind of surprised you to find out that they were so crazy haunted?
Probably the one that surprised me the most was the White House. There's a lot of ghostly activity there. Abraham Lincoln is reported as the most cited ghost in the White House. And, Eleanor Roosevelt used the Lincoln bedroom as her study and sensed his presence when she worked late at night. And, Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands reportedly fainted when she saw Lincoln's ghost complete with a top hat. And Prime Minister Winston Churchill, on a visit to the White House, told a story of emerging naked from his evening bath, smoking his customary cigar, only to find a ghostly Lincoln sitting by the fireplace in his room. And more recently, Jenna Bush, daughter of George, claimed encounters with ghosts in the White House. Supposedly, music from the 1920s emanated from the fireplace in her room. And one night after hearing the music, she ran to her twin sister and told her about it. And the next night, they both stayed up and heard the same music coming from the fireplace. So I haven't heard anything about the Obamas and the ghosts, but I suspect later on we'll hear more stories from that family.
Now, with the visions of Abraham Lincoln coming there, has there ever been any communication? Have any of the presidents ever come forward stating that they have, in fact, interacted with the ghost? Or is it just always visual confirmation that they see?
You know, I've never heard in my research any of the presidents themselves talking about seeing ghosts. It's other people in the White House. Mary Todd Lincoln, she believed in spiritualism and supposedly held seances in the White House. And she had a confrontation with Andrew Jackson, who was stomping and swearing through the halls of the White House. And, I think it's the Rose Room is Jackson's bedchamber while he was president. That's believed to be one of the most haunted rooms in the White House.
Now, there's also kind of a harbinger ghost that's known to hang out around there, isn't there? Is it a Confederate soldier that's seen on the White House lawn, or is it one of the redcoats? I can't remember. It's from one of the wars. There's somebody there that just does not belong that far close to the actual White House, isn't there?
I'm not familiar with that story. I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, it's like a Confederate soldier or somebody that's seen around the White House, and it's usually prior to something negative happening to either one of the staff members. I believe that they said that there was this soldier's ghost showed up in the property and was seen by multiple witnesses prior to the JFK assassination. So kind of strange deals. You know, as Jeff Belanger says, ghosts are probably history's way of reminding us what took place and you know, keeping us in the loop so that we don't forget our history and where we came from.
Right, yeah. Another location that's is a very prominent residents who are ghosts is the Dakota Building, which is situated right at Central Park West and 72nd Street in New York. It's 64 co-op apartments, and it has a long history of paranormal activity. John Lennon lived there. He saw a ghost. It was a woman who was walking down the hallway crying. He called her the crying lady ghost. And now people have seen John Lennon, including Yoko Ono. Saw him sitting at his piano. And there was a friend of his also saw John kind of surrounded by an eerie light, and he wanted to go up and talk to him. He's standing right outside of the Dakota, but there was something the way he looked that said that just told him don't go any closer.
Wow. And you wonder if you pushed past that fear, would there be an interaction? Would you somehow be involving yourself in the timeline? You know, would he see you? Would you see him? What exactly happens in those moments? And why are we being told to keep away? I mean, if we're just witnessing a flash in time, why does this fear level hit us so high?
Yeah. With Yoko Ono, it's a little different because she reported seeing him sitting at his white piano, and he turned to her and said, "Don't be afraid. I'm still with you."
Right, and I know that during the recording session, the Beatles got back together, Ringo, Paul, and George, and they recorded that new album. And I believe they said that at one point during their sessions, a white peacock came walking by, and they knew that that was a sign from John. They felt that he was part of the recording session with them, and they were getting weird noises through some of the recording sessions as well when they were trying to put that together with old audio he had recorded and some of the lyrics he had created for some of the songs as well.
Yeah.
It's fascinating when you can talk about, you know, the celebrities, and you would think with the love and the amount of interest in these celebrities, it of course would kind of keep them anchored to us. Are they really the celebrity spirit, or is it our manifestations and will keeping part of them as almost a residual haunting in these locations? Tell me, as you're doing some of this, what was some of the oddest ghost stories that you encountered in your research?
Probably the oddest ones were some of the cultural related ones that were somewhat mythical, and it's hard to say how much reality exists, how real some of these stories are, but they're a part of the people's history. In Japan, there's Jikininki, J-I-K-I-N-I-N-K-I. They're hungry ghosts, and they have an insatiable appetite for corpses. And that's a gruesome story. And in Eastern Europe, there's the Leshy, L-E-S-H-Y. They hate humans, and they prefer the company of bears. But they can mimic voices of your family and friends and lead you into a cave where they will, wait for it, tickle you to death.
Tickle you to death?
Yeah, that's the story. That is probably the strangest story I heard. And that's not all of it. It's possible to escape from the Leshy by turning your clothes inside out and wearing your shoes on the wrong feet. So that's a very strange story.
Where did those kind of stories? I mean, I understand, you know, we've heard so many stories through history, and a lot of them seem to be, you know, spirits that are associated with water or the woods or dark places. And when you really look at the root of them, a lot of these stories seem to be ways parents keep us safe, right? They tell us these stories to keep us from going into the woods at night or going to the cave or playing by the water's edge. And if they make it sound as though there's something there that might hurt you or steal you or, you know, aside from just wildlife, it seems that that's more of a way to control us. But when you come up with a character that way, it's just seems so obscure that that's the way you would deflect the ghost, inside out clothes and shoes on the wrong feet.
Yeah, that's a very strange story. But to your point, there's another being called the Encantado, which is someone who shows up. This is along the Amazon River at parties that are taking place in the village. And the Encantado, he comes and he's wearing a hat, and he's very handsome fellow, and he's going after the available young women, and he finds one of them and leads her off over to the river, and then they disappear into the river, and he's actually a dolphin. He transforms into a dolphin. The reason he's wearing the hat is because he's covering his blowhole, and then a couple of days later, the young woman comes back. And lo and behold, she turns out to be pregnant. So this is a story of explaining out of wedlock pregnancies in these villages. The dolphin did it.
The dolphin did it. Now, intriguing too, right? Because some believe that dolphins are actually evolved versions of the grays, who were left here and ended up going into the oceans to avoid dinosaurs and other predators. Is that something that you've ever come across in your research regarding the alien world as well?
That's interesting. Well, there is another story somewhat related to that. And this takes place on Andros Island. It's the Chukcharnies. They're a 3-foot-tall bird-like creature that resembles an owl. And they live deep in the forest. This is the largest island of the Bahamas, and it's 90% uninhabited forest. And the islanders believe that encounters can bring you either good luck or bad luck, depending how you act. But you combine this 3-foot-tall owl-like creature. It's remindful of the gray aliens. You combine that with the fact that Andros Island is the home of a secret U.S. Navy base called AUTEC that's sometimes known as the Underwater Area 51. And so because of a lot of sightings of USOs, unidentified submerged objects. So that's an interesting one that intrigues me. I have to wonder about that one.
We've got a little bit of time here together, and I want to save some of the celebrity ghost stories for when we return after the top of the hour. But, you know, talking about the strangeness of the creatures, and you were certainly going over quite a few we hadn't heard, and I know those are different cultural experiences. I know in Europe, they take a much harder look at, I think, what they call the hidden folk, like elves and fairies and trolls and forest guardians. Do you find it, when you're doing the research, that there is real hard proof that does exist over there? And why don't we have that same concern over here? I mean, we have environment and the outdoors here, you would think that it would be just as prevalent.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's part of our history with the nature spirits, and possibly because we have become such a technically advanced society that these nature spirits have receded from our awareness and possibly moved into a parallel universe. In fact, in shamanism, there's the upper world, the middle world, and the lower world. And the middle world is very similar to our own world, but it's like a parallel world. And it's where the shamans can speak with the spirits of rocks, trees, plants, winds, water. And it's where the hidden folks are, the fairies, the elves, the trolls, the dwarves, and forest guardians that are, you know, present in all these old myths and stories. So, you know, these hidden folks, they kind of remind us of a magical time before our lives, you know, became as technical and advanced as we see them now. So it's, but now there seems to be like this veil between the worlds.
And, you know, it's easy to sit here in 2014 and think, well, yes, that sounds like, you know, old legend and lore, but there's actually countries that still are affected by fairy villages and trollville where they won't, they'll actually stop excavations. They'll stop putting a road through in certain areas because they don't want to interrupt this. And they do take it that seriously, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. The Apu is the spirit of the mountains in the Andes, which is the former realm of the Incas. And the Apu are still active spirit beings. And people in Peru, the mountains, take the Apu very seriously.
Right, and you look at all of these different creatures. Now, they're not, so people know as well, the difference is the fairy folk and these things, they're not happy, loving spirits. A lot of these creatures are very territorial and very nasty, aren't they?
That's true, yeah, and that's... The Apu can be both frightening experiences or helpful experiences.
I was just going to say, when you're researching that, I mean, is it harder for you as a researcher to buy into the stories of fairy folk and these hidden folk as opposed to what we're used to here in our own culture in the United States?
You know, when you read about these myths and legends, you know, these have been passed down, handed down over the centuries, and how much have they changed? How much? There's probably some nugget of truth in each of them, but they've maybe been expanded in different ways to make them a little more frightening or more interesting. So, yeah, they're different than current ghost stories that people might have, or contact with aliens. The mythical ones are a little more on the lighthearted side, I would say.
Do you ever see any kind of connection between these fairy folk and the elementals with alien contact? And I mean, we have about a minute left in the segment, but do you ever see that connection?
That's a possibility that there could be connection there, because it used to be that when you talked of aliens, it was a nuts and bolts thing. They came in, they were seen as a little more advanced than humans, coming in crafts from other planets. But in the last few decades, though, they're more the sense of them possibly being more like interdimensional beings is, I think, much more prominent now, and that they may have, being interdimensional beings, they could have contact with the spirit world and see what we consider the dead, the spirits. They might not see them that way at all. So, yeah, there could be definitely that connection.
Well, we've got Rob McGregor for another hour. We're also going to open up the phone lines for your calls. If you have questions for our guests, stories of your own you'd like to relate, Bump in the Night, Ghosts, Spirits, and Alien Encounters, Celebrity Ghost Encounters, Celebrity Ghosts, and we'll hear two examples of ghosts that have testified from the grave in their own murder cases. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM.